Iran has often been placed under severe sanctions, what they call crippling, using different pretexts. Naturally, when you're under sanctions, countries cannot cooperate with you despite being able to do so. The Islamic Republic, through its researches, has managed to reach this stage. This is a significant point, which is unacceptable to those countries that have conflicting interests. Hence, they resort to fabrications and hatching plots, as we have seen for over the past 20 years.
Mohammad Islami made the remarks during a joint press conference with Director General of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, in Tehran. Islami highlighted Iran's advancements in developing a comprehensive nuclear industry for peaceful purposes for the benefit of Iranians. He also emphasized the country will respond decisively to any interventionist actions by countries at the IAEA. Grossi, for his part, said the goal of his Tehran visit is to resolve issues related to Iran's nuclear program, reacting to recent threats from the Israeli officials to attack Iranian nuclear facilities. Grossi warned such move will violate international law and cause significant environmental damage. Both officials called their talks effective and constructive, expressing hope for tangible results. Iran's president once again stresses his country's firm opposition with production of nuclear arms globally. Masoud Pezeshkian made the remarks in a meeting with the director of the International Atomic Energy Agency, Rafael Grossi, in Tehran. Pezeshkian said Tehran has never pursued production of nuclear weapons, and the leader of the Islamic Revolution has issued a religious edict against such weapons. He said the world has acknowledged Iran is after peace and security for the whole world. Pezeshkian emphasized Tehran's readiness for cooperation with the IAEA to settle differences with the agency. Grossi, for his part, hailed Islamic Republic's cooperation with the IAEA. Iran's repeatedly said it is ready to work with the UN agency to resolve any ambiguities regarding its nuclear program, but will not accept pressure or intimidation. Now, at least 15 people have been killed and many more injured following Israeli airstrikes on the suburbs of the Syrian capital, Damascus. According to Syrian media, air raids hit two residential buildings in the Damascus western parts. Syrian Ministry of Defense said aggression was launched from the occupied Golan Heights. Israeli Army Radio has also confirmed this attack. Regime claims it targeted the headquarters of the Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement. Israel has been carrying out repeated airstrikes on Syria since 2013, and attacks have claimed many civilian lives and caused major damage to civilian infrastructure. Israeli strikes on Syria have increased significantly after regime's genocidal onslaught started on the Gaza Strip in October last year. The Israeli army has conducted fresh strikes in various areas of the Gaza Strip, killing and injuring several Palestinians. An Israeli attack on a school in western Gaza left at least 3 Palestinians dead and 10 wounded. In another wave of assaults, Israeli forces attacked Gaza City, as well as the Jabalia and Nusayr refugee camps in northern Gaza. It took place a day after the regime massacred at least 33 people across the Strip. People are trapped in their homes, especially in northern Gaza, which is still under crippling siege for over a month. Earlier, Israeli artillery shelled Al-Maghazi and Al-Burayj refugee camps in central Gaza. Death toll from the regime's genocidal war, which started in October last year, has now topped 43,700, along with over 103,000 Palestinians injured. And Israeli forces once again target a designated safe zone in Gaza with air and heavy artillery strikes. Let's take a listen to Palestinians recalling this onslaught.
This is the Mawasi area, which they told us was safe. They told us that from Salahuddin Street to the west, it is safe, and from Salahuddin to the east, is not safe. Come to find none of it is safe.
We were sitting, and a helicopter came and fired 2 rockets and then left. And so we thought the area was safe now. But suddenly the Israeli warplanes came and destroyed it. This is where people from Beit Hanun and Rafah had been displaced to. And they say it's safe area, but turns out there is no safe area in the Gaza Strip.
A new UN report found Israel's actions in Gaza are consistent with genocide. Report by the UN Human Rights Committee covers Israeli atrocities since the regime unleashed its ongoing war on Gaza in October of last year up till July of this year. Committee has condemned Israel for using starvation as a method of collective punishment against Palestinian civilians. It also denounced the occupying regime for deliberately targeting civilians and causing starvation through siege, obstruction of humanitarian aid, and targeted attacks on aid workers. The UN, in its report, blamed the Israeli regime for destroying vital water sanitation systems and contaminating the environment, which will inflict severe harm on generations to come. Israel's decision to prohibit UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, from operating in occupied territories has sparked widespread condemnations. Let's take a listen.
In Gaza, dismantling UNRWA will collapse the United Nations humanitarian response, which relies heavily on the agency infrastructure. Glaringly absent from discussion about Gaza without UNRWA is education. Palestinians value education highly. It is the only asset from which they have not, until now, been dispossessed. In the absence of a capable public administration or state, only UNRWA can deliver education to more than 660,000 girls and boys across Gaza. In the absence of UNRWA, an entire generation will be denied the right to education. Their future will be sacrificed, sowing the seeds for marginalization and extremism.
Even at peril to their own lives, UNRWA staff continue striving to save the lives of others, providing assistance and sustenance to those violently denied it by a ruthless settler colonial and apartheid regime that is targeting them and depriving them of their rights solely because of who they are, Palestinians, in what is an ongoing Nakba that has now reached genocidal proportions in Gaza.
An Israeli captive held in Gaza slammed the regime's indiscriminate bombing and shelling campaign in the besieged strip while calling for protests to press for a prisoner swap deal. A Palestinian resistance group, Islamic Jihad, has released a video of 28-year-old Alexander Turbanov, who says Israel attacks in Gaza endanger the lives of captives. Turbanov says that he was saved by resistance fighters several times during the regime's many strikes. Captive also denounced blocking aid deliveries into Gaza, saying it has a direct impact on captives' lives and is not limited to just Palestinians. Several captives have been killed in Israeli strikes on Gaza, and dozens have been released in a previous truce deal. However, an estimated 100 Israelis are still being held in Gaza. Palestinian resistance groups say they will release the captives once a permanent ceasefire deal is struck. Yemen's Ansarullah leader slammed the U.S. as complicit in Israeli crimes in Gaza and Lebanon, saying American weapons are enabling and fueling the wars of extermination in the region.
Israeli criminality, the Israeli tyranny, is at its peak. They are committing crimes of genocide. They are prohibiting any medicine and food to reach the Palestinian people. They're destroying the cities and the towns and the villages in the Gaza Strip almost completely and entirely. The American is a partner with the Israelis in all of this. And they allow, the U.S. allows all these bombs, they give it all these bombs to allow them to kill women and children in Palestine, and they kill the people of Lebanon as well.
Abdul Malik al-Houthi said that Israel's presence and practices in the region pose a serious threat to Islamic nation's freedom and independence. Yemeni leader once again condemned certain Arab nations for increased cooperation and trade with Israel. He stressed that it's such a unconditional support will not bring them security or stability in the face of the regime's regional expansionist project. Al-Houthi also held resistance fighters' resilience, saying their numerous operations have inflicted heavy losses on invading Israeli occupation force troops in Gaza and Lebanon. The Ansarullah leader also vowed that Yemen will continue its military operations in support of Lebanese and Palestinian people, calling such backing a religious and humanitarian duty. The Israeli regime pressed ahead with its aggression against Lebanon, causing more civilian death and injuries in latest attacks on the Arab country. 9 people were killed in an air raid on the city of Baalbek in Lebanon's Bekaa Valley. Several others have been injured. Israel strikes also hit multiple areas in the capital, including Burj Al Barajne and Hare Harik. A similar strike on southern Beirut on Wednesday resulted in the deaths of 8 people. Israeli jets also struck the United Nations peacekeeping mission in Lebanon, UNIFIL, prompting a Security Council to condemn the attacks. The recent strikes bring a Lebanese death toll since October last year to over 3,370, along with over 14,300 Lebanese have also been injured. Meanwhile, Hezbollah has carried out fresh retaliatory operations against Israel, targeting several military positions there of the regime. In a statement, Hezbollah said it targeted Israeli troop gatherings in Sasa settlement, north of occupied Palestinian territories. Also, according to Israeli media, air raid sirens were sounded in several towns and settlements in the northern parts of occupied Palestine. Hezbollah said attacks were in response to Israeli strikes against Lebanese towns, villages, and civilians, as well as in support of Palestinians in Gaza and their resistance. Israel has confirmed the deaths of dozens of its soldiers in southern Lebanon as it continues its ground invasion there. Amidst the humanitarian crisis in occupied Palestine, the Fourth Congress on Trauma in Tehran has gathered medical professionals focusing on Gaza. A two-day event aims to share insight and enhance collaborative medical responses. Mehdi Nourouzi reports.
With the spotlight on medical experiences in the occupied Palestine, the Fourth Congress on Trauma, held in Tehran, brought together a diverse group of medical professionals, including doctors, nurses, and researchers.
2 days Congress, including 18 sessions, in particular a special session regarding trauma in Gaza, and we would like to present our experience regarding trauma in the war.
The Iranian medical community has shown a genuine concern for the traumatic conditions faced by the people, physicians, and paramedics in Gaza, despite the fact that the international community has largely ignored the ongoing humanitarian crisis there.
Gaza has been the site of one of the largest conflicts, revealing a deeply traumatizing reality. We felt it was essential to honor the physicians and paramedics who sacrificed their lives on the battlefield.
Regarding the Israeli war on Gaza and Lebanon, I can say that we have international relations with doctors in both regions via teleconference. We will also discuss how trauma can be prevented and treated, particularly considering the daily trauma experienced by the oppressed children of Gaza.
As medical professionals dedicated to saving lives, we find it inconceivable. Explosives were discovered in tools and equipment. Pagers designed by the Israeli regime blinded hundreds of Lebanese.
Iranian hospitals have always been ready to help, and the healthcare assistance they offer this time is no different.
The injured brought to Iran after the pager blast received full coverage by the Iranian healthcare system. Appropriate actions were taken for them. Iranian hospitals treated over 500 injured Lebanese people.
In its genocidal war on Gaza and Lebanon, Israel has not spared even hospitals, leading to a tsunami of trauma among the people, medical professionals, paramedics, and most importantly, children. The Trauma Congress is an opportunity to discuss exactly that.
The ongoing conflict in Gaza has resulted in significant devastation to the healthcare infrastructure. Conferences like this, centered on Gaza's health conditions, can raise global awareness of the dire humanitarian crisis in the blockaded territory. Mehdi Nourouzi, Tehran.
The German coalition government has collapsed following tensions over the continued military and financial aid for the war in Ukraine and the Israeli genocide in West Asia. Now a newly formed anti-war party aims to change Germany's political landscape in the coming elections. Our correspondent in Berlin, Dieter Reinisch, has more.
Following the collapse of the German government, snap elections will be called on February 23. Last week, the government lost its majority in the German parliament, the Bundestag. Since the last elections, the country has been ruled by a coalition of three parties, the Social Democrats and the two smaller parties, the Greens and the Liberal FDP. The government faced mounting pressure and disagreement since the start of the Ukrainian war in February 2022 and the Al-Aqsa flood on October 7 last year. Germany is the biggest European financial donor and military supporter of Ukraine and Israel. Disagreements over further budget spending led to the dismissal of Lindner as financial minister, resulting in the FDP leaving the government.
I made a political decision last week and dismissed the finance minister. This decision led to changes in Germany's political landscape. It was a correct decision. There will be snap elections very soon.
In opposition to Germany's role in the wars in Eastern Europe and the genocide in West Asia, 10 parliamentarians formed a new anti-war party under the name of their leader, Bündnis Sahra Wagenknecht.
People in Germany are fed up with the coalition. They don't want this war rhetoric. The conservatives will not bring any change. The coming elections need to strengthen the forces of peace and against war, and we are the only force consistent in this regard. We don't need a government that hopes that Donald Trump will bring peace or anything. We need a government that works independently of the US and stops escalating the aggressions and wars.
The party recently made impressive gains in three local elections in eastern German states. At a press statement on Tuesday, asked by Press TV, they confirmed that opposition to Germany's pro-imperialist policy will be at the center of their election campaign over the coming month.
The question of war and peace will be an essential focus for our election campaign because it is a crucial problem. The candidate of the CDU, Friedrich Merz, declared that he is willing to fire Taurus rockets from Germany to Russia within 24 hours. This means nothing less than declaring war against a nuclear power. This is totally irresponsible.
On October the 3rd, the party organized a mass anti-war demonstration attended by over 50,000 in Berlin. Polls indicate they will have a strong presence in the next parliament and might change Germany's foreign policy for good.
Opposition to Germany's support for the war in Ukraine and the Israeli genocide is growing. As a result, an anti-war party was formed earlier this year aimed at rallying opposition to the transatlantic politics of the EU and Germany. Political commentators expect the party to win in the forthcoming elections. Dieter Reinisch from Berlin.
That's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us, and goodbye for now.
This is the Heart of Life pounding. IRIB English Radio.
The late leader of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement said Hassan Nasrallah has ensured that Hezbollah will forever be a thorn in the side of the Israeli regime, and the struggle shall continue until the liberation of the occupied Palestinian territories. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered this story and tells us more. It has been over 40 days since Hezbollah resistance movement leader and revered icon of the Axis of Resistance, Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, attained martyrdom after decades of struggle. Throughout more than a year of relentless American-Israeli genocidal war against Gaza, said Hassan Nasrallah without a shade of a doubt, demonstrated his unwavering courage and commitment to the Palestinian cause and literally walked the talk. At a time when Arab leaders were still bamboozled and unsure about how to react, said Hassan Nasrallah ordered his resistance fighters to join Operation Al-Aqsa Flood on 8th of October. Years ago, when the US offered security guarantees to Hezbollah in exchange for the Lebanese resistance movement severing its ties with the Palestinians, he resolutely responded, "You offer us security while Palestine, its people, Al-Quds and the Al-Aqsa Mosque have no security. Damn you and damn your security guarantees." This declaration came almost 24 years ago, soon after Hezbollah had famously forced Israeli occupation forces out of Lebanon. Other Arab leaders, except for Syria, fell into these so-called security assurances. The late Hezbollah leader noted almost a decade ago, "The Americans even informed us that you can continue backing the Palestinians and their resistance in public. That's why you hear some Arab rulers publicly supporting the Palestinians." Today, following the year-long genocidal war in Gaza, which has massacred nearly 43,700 Palestinians, said Hassan Nasrallah's words resonate more powerfully than ever before. But he left behind more than wise words. He left a Lebanese resistance movement that has made him and many around the world incredibly proud with their pro-Palestine operations. The current Israeli war on Lebanon surpasses even the 2006 war, which lasted 33 days. Back then, Israeli occupation forces penetrated more than 10 kilometers into Lebanese territory. Though Hezbollah had planned ambushes within Lebanese territory, forcing the occupying forces to retreat quickly from towns like Ben Jebel. Now, nearly a month and a half into another attempted ground invasion of Lebanon, the Israeli occupation forces are merely shifting meters at the border, failing to secure a single Lebanese village. On at least three occasions since last September, Hezbollah has successfully repelled Israeli forces at the strategic village of Al-Khiyam, leaving the occupation humiliated. This costly stalemate has compelled Israel to seek indirect political negotiations, although Lebanon remains uninvolved, with US envoy Hochstein absent from Beirut. It's a failed ground invasion by all measures, even admitted by the Israeli media themselves. Further evidence of defeat may be seen in Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's unceremonious dismissal of Yoav Gallant, the war minister, pointing to increased fissures and disintegration within the regime. Unlike Netanyahu, Gallant, with his military background, recognized that a ground invasion of Lebanon was suicidal for Israeli troops, something that Netanyahu could not accept despite mounting Israeli military casualties at the border. Yoav Gallant also noted that Israel's setbacks in Gaza, particularly in the northern part of the blockaded territory around Jabalia, which continues to resist despite intense bombardment. Netanyahu isn't the only one unwilling to yield. Palestinians and Lebanese also remain defiant and resolute, unbowed by American-Israeli attempts to turn them against the resistance. The resistance in Gaza's north is deeply moving. Despite continuous bombings, Palestinians prefer to die in their homes rather than be forced to other areas and get burnt alive at a hospital shelter. A brave Palestinian woman declared, "I will use this white cloth as a shroud for my children, but never wave it as a flag of surrender." She spoke for all Palestinians and Lebanese. The Palestinian resistance continues to claim Israeli military casualties in Gaza despite heavy bombardment, a commitment that Hezbollah mirrors by maintaining its support for the besieged territory, its people, and its resistance. Hezbollah's strength dispels any doubt about its future after Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah's martyrdom. Nasrallah's leadership endures, with Hezbollah carrying forward his plans with renewed vigor and resolve. The English website of Al Mayadeen television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. The late Hezbollah leader Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah said in one of his final speeches, "In any future war, if Israeli forces bomb Lebanon's power plants, airports and seaports, we will bomb your power plants, your airports and your seaports in occupied Palestine." Today, Hezbollah has put this formula into action, striking targets deep inside the occupied Haifa port and Ben-Gurion airport. "With each move, Hezbollah stays a step ahead," said Hassan Nasrallah, vowed unbreakable and unshakable support for Gaza, a promise that Hezbollah has kept more than 40 days since his martyrdom. In his final speech, he declared, "No settlers will return to northern occupied Palestine until a ceasefire is reached in Gaza." Hezbollah's missiles have since forced even more settlers to depart. Importantly, Hezbollah has used only a fraction of its military resources, holding reserves for various scenarios, including potential US intervention, a contingency plan that Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah himself prepared the Lebanese resistance to meet. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, in a heartfelt and beautiful tribute to Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, declared, "My brother, my dear one, a source of pride for me." Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah ensured that Hezbollah will forever be a thorn in the side of the Israeli regime and that the struggle shall continue until the liberation of all occupied territories. At this moment, Lebanon is facing a war of aggression unleashed by the heavily armed settler colonial regime that is dragging the entire region towards death and destruction. Today, Lebanon is being terrorized because the Lebanese resistance movement intervened in the ongoing genocide in Gaza. In fact, the small country of Lebanon is once again under attack from a nuclear-armed colonial regime that is enjoying enthusiastic military, political, economic, and ideological backing and unconditional protection from the United States and its proxies.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, Salamun Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Osama Abdul Ghani.
A little bit about current events. And of course, all of us, our hearts are bleeding from this. Because you and I, we saw both the worst of humanity and the best of humanity. On one side, you and I, we had to witness all of that carnage and destruction and savagery and brutality of the Israelis. On the other side, though, we saw such bravery and patience under the most extreme circumstances. So what happened was, on one side, you see that kind of submission to Allah, that kind of bravery, right? Normally, for a resistance movement. If the people are taking that kind of a battering, right? Because normally you send soldiers out to the front, and soldiers are fighting, and they're taking a battery, but the majority, the civilians, aren't taking that kind of a battery. This war was different. The civilians were taking a battery, a legendary, what the Israelis were doing to them, in front of the whole world. But did you see the Palestinians croak? Did the Palestinians give up? Did they blame the resistance? Did they say, enough is enough? Or did they, the people, the women, the children, the elderly, say that we all be sacrificed for the resistance? Whatever it takes. Malcolm X said something a long time ago. He said, the price for freedom is death. He said, if you're not willing to pay that price, take freedom out of your vocabulary. It was worth all of that loss of life. Now to see just some of the effects, just some of the effects. Do you know how many Palestinian children are in prison right now, in the Israeli prisons? These kind of people who on television say, killing children isn't enough. You saw that guy in New York. What do you think of people like this who can bomb civilians, attack hospitals, murder babies, take children who are on the incubators, make sure they don't have electricity so that they suffocate? What do you think these people do to children behind cameras? Do you know what kind of animals we're facing? It's like feral animals just to be put down. This kind of savagery. So we saw this. Now, why is that so important for this Fatemiyah? The reason that's important for Fatemiyah is the following. This victory that you saw, and this is just the beginning, because Israel is never going back to where it used to be. The victories, inshallah, one day you'll get a chance just to look and learn and see what victories were achieved during this period of time. Alhamdulillah. By the grace of God, by the resistance of the Palestinians, and before everything, by the help of God. This was achieved through Islamic unity. The axis of resistance. In the forefront, you had the Palestinians giving hell to the Zionists. But then we also had our brothers in Yemen. May Allah bless them. We had our brothers in Iraq putting in that work. We had Hezbollah. We're talking about 1/3 at least of the Zionist army. And the numbers are out there. They weren't able to concentrate on Gaza because of what Hezbollah was giving them. And then behind all of that, you had our wise leadership, the Islamic Republic, which was managing and helping the axis of resistance. So this was achieved, this victory was achieved through Islamic unity. Question. Should Fatemiyah be something that leads or undermines Islamic unity? The Ayyam Fatemiyah, should that be something that undermines Islamic unity? Because these victories and the rest that are coming are in the under the assistance or by the help of Islamic unity. Right? Because there are some enemies who are out there and they're not sleeping. And they've already started to speak. On one side, they're working on and calling out by name Abu Ubaidah. There's videos that are already out there. They're trying to undermine Islamic unity. On the side of the Shias, there are others who unfortunately would take something as glorious as Fatemiyah and use it in that way. So the answer is no. We, in the axis of resistance, we're adults. We know that ideologically we have some differences. We respect those. We're not forcing anyone to accept or embrace what we believe, and nor is anyone else in the axis of resistance forcing us to embrace something that we don't believe. We have much more that unites us than we do that divides us. We have Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We have the Quran. We have the love of the Prophet. We have incredible veneration amongst all Muslims for the progeny of the Prophet. We have a common enemy. Right? So we have much more that unites us. Yet, we all understand and we respect that we do have ideological differences. Those are there, and we're not going to do that. Now, there's something that is repetitive, those who want to cause fitna say. They say this. Some of the Palestinians are Nawasib. Some of the Palestinians are Nawasib. They helped Daesh in order to undermine unity. You know what we say in response? Brothers and sisters, having a small fraction of one community that believes in Daesh or our Nawasib, does that mean it's everybody? Let's be real with ourselves. With other Muslims who are from other ethnic backgrounds, not Palestinians, which group of Muslims from which ethnic background can say that no one from our ethnic background has the same mentality as Daesh? Can Iraqis say that? That there's no Iraqi who doesn't think like that? Can Iranians say there's no one Iranian? Can Lebanese say that? In every group, there's some one small number of people. That's not the majority. The majority have great reverence for the family of the Prophet. And it's unfair to go over and to ignore an Islamic principle, which was to fight for justice, to support the oppressed, because of some small minority. So inshallah, we won't let any of that happen. And although we will have majalis, and we will have masaib, the leader has majalis, the leader has masaib, Imam Khamenei, yes, we will have them, but our take from Fatimiyah won't be a take that makes Bin Gavir happy. Fatimiyah, if it's done right, it unites the ummah. So in that khutbah for Fadak, the khutbah of Fadak, Sayyida Fatima, one of the lines she said is this. She said that God, she was explaining the philosophy behind many of the things that are there in Islam. One line of it was this. She said that God made imamatana amanan min al-furqa. God designated or made our imamate a means of protection from separation. Amanan min al-furqa. So my take on Fatimiyah and how it shouldn't be something that goes against what Sayyida Fatima says.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Adi Alim Halim Hakim Mati. وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
A new analysis has indicated that Donald Trump's plan to deport millions of immigrants from the United States would cost hundreds of billions of dollars. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. In the last month of the presidential campaign, President-elect Donald Trump doubled down on his promise to carry out the largest mass deportation effort in American history. In Reading, Pennsylvania, Donald Trump drew fervent applause from a rally crowd after saying he would get these people out and deport them so rapidly. In Aurora, Colorado, Trump told rallygoers he would rescue Aurora and every town that has been invaded and conquered. Immigration researchers, lawyers, and economists have pointed to immense constitutional, humanitarian, and economic problems posed by Donald Trump's oft-repeated pledge. But beyond the anticipated damage to immigrant families, communities, and local economies, the roundup and deportation of some 11 million people is near impossible to bankroll. According to an analysis of U.S. budget and immigration court data by CBS News, such an effort would cost hundreds of billions of dollars. Even if Congress approved the hundreds of billions of dollars in spending, deporting every undocumented immigrant living in the United States would take far longer than 4 years, according to the analysis. CBS News analysis of immigration system data found that apprehending and deporting just 1 million people could cost as much as $20 billion for the U.S. taxpayer. Deporting 11 million people over 4 years would cost more than 20 times what the nation spent a year over the last 5 years on deporting people living in the United States. Most of that would be new funding that would have to be approved by a majority of both chambers of Congress. Assuming that Donald Trump did get the funding and could rapidly expand the staffing in immigration enforcement and courts, the backlog of cases would grow, not decrease, by millions of cases based on what's happened in the last two administrations. Trump's own administration, despite promising to deport millions of people in 2016, deported 325,660 people during the fiscal years that he was in office. Over the last five fiscal years, it cost an estimated $19,599 to deport one person, according to a CBS News analysis of federal data. That figure is based on budget allocations for each step of the deportation process. The apprehension of an undocumented immigrant living in the United States, detention of that immigrant, the immigration court process, and transport out of the country. From 2021 to 2023, as migrant crossings at the southern border reach record highs, Immigration and Customs Enforcement deployed roughly a sixth of its workforce typically dedicated to deportation to the border to assist Customs and Border Patrol. ICE, or Immigration and Customs Enforcement, also diverted resources to removals under Title 42, an emergency health authority enacted during the pandemic that allowed Border Patrol to turn away migrants attempting to cross the border into the United States. Fewer people were deported from the interior of the United States during those years than in prior years, which drove up the cost per deportation. But even when Donald Trump was president and the number of border crossings was lower than they were during the post-pandemic spike, the cost of deporting one person was still $14,614. To deport all 11 million undocumented immigrants estimated to be living in the United States would cost between $40 billion and $54 billion a year over the next presidential term. Even the lower end of that annual estimate, $40 billion, is enough to provide 20 million families each with a child tax credit each year, and is more than double the Federal Emergency Management Agency's entire budget. Over 4 years, the sum, amounting to $160 to $216 billion, is comparable to the cost of constructing around 500,000 new homes across the country. A similar analysis from the American Immigration Council put the total cost of deporting 11 million people even higher, at roughly $315 billion. Donald Trump has said the local law enforcement will help with mass deportation since they know their names, they know their serial numbers. But experts are saying it's not that simple. One of the assumptions in the Trump proposal is that those local police and sheriffs are going to cooperate. According to Abigail Andrews, director of the Center for Comparative Immigration Studies at the University of California at San Diego, Abigail Andrews says, "We know from the last couple of decades that one of the major ways for cities and states to dissent around immigration processes has been for the police to cooperate or not cooperate with ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement." Trump has said he would deploy the National Guard to identify and detain immigrants who have entered illegally. That plan could face legal barriers since law prohibits the use of federal troops for civilian law enforcement unless authorized by Congress. CNBC has also covered the same story and tells us more. President-elect Donald Trump won the White House based partly on his promises to rein in immigration, with targeted policies that range from sending criminals to their home countries to more sweeping ones like mass deportations. During the campaign, Donald Trump pledged to end the temporary protected status that allows workers from select countries to come to the United States to work. If some of the larger deportation efforts, like rolling back the temporary protected status, come to fruition, experts say that there will be ripple effects felt in most sections of the economy, in particular in construction sector, housing and in agriculture sector. Economists and labor specialists are most worried about the economic impact of policies that would deport workers already in the United States, both documented and undocumented. Staffing agencies are particularly worried about Donald Trump's pledge to mass deport undocumented immigrants. Jason Leverant, president and chief operating officer of At Work Group, said, "The morning after the election, we sat down as a leadership team and explored what does this mean for talent availability. Workers, talent in industry parlance, are already in short supply. While the worst of the labor crisis spurred by the post-COVID economic boom has passed and labor supply and demand has come back into the balance in recent months, the number of workers available to fill jobs across the U.S. economy remains a closely watched data point. Mass deportation would exacerbate this economic issue," according to employers and economists. Jason Leverant added, "If the proposed immigration policies come into reality, there could be a significant impact." There are various statistics offered up about the undocumented immigrant population in the United States. The left-leaning Center for American Progress puts the number at around 11.3 million, with 7 million of them working. The American Immigration Council and Advocacy Group also puts the figure at around 11 million undocumented immigrants living in the United States. The nonpartisan Pew Research Center puts the number closer to 8 million people. You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of this speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a thousand of veterans and active members in the sacred defense and the resistance field. The meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on September 25, 2024. God's righteous servants receive divine support. They endure hardships as the people of Iran endured great hardships during the 8-year sacred defense. Today, a similar event is unfolding in Lebanon and Palestine. These events in Lebanon and Palestine are similar to our imposed war and sacred defense. These two is jihad and the path of God. An Islamic country, that is Palestine, has been usurped by the most malicious unbelievers in the world. The definite religious ruling is that it is obligatory for everyone to work and help to return Palestine and the Al-Aqsa Mosque to the Muslims and their rightful owners. A divine movement is taking place here. The people of the Palestine and Gaza are fighting on the path of God. They are truly taking part in jihad on the path of God. Those who help them are helping jihad on the path of God. Lebanon's Hezbollah, which is standing up for Gaza and putting itself in the middle of these bitter events, is taking part in jihad on the path of God.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
In this battle, the unbelieving evil enemy is equipped with the best resources, and the U.S. is behind them. The U.S. claims that they aren't involved and are unaware of matters. This is false. They are both aware and involved, and they need the Zionist regime to be victorious. Because of the upcoming elections, the current U.S. administration needs to demonstrate that it has supported the Zionist regime and helped it achieve victory. But they also need the votes of Muslims, so they pretend they are not involved. But in fact, they are involved. The enemy has money, weapons, resources, and a global propaganda system. The opposing side, which is the believers and the mujahideen who fight on the path of God, don't have even a hundredth of those resources. But at the same time, the one who is the victor is the one who fights on the path of God. The Palestinian resistance is the victor. Hezbollah is the victor. Up until today, Hezbollah and the resistance forces have been the victors. And the proof of this is that the Zionist regime has resorted to killing civilians.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
The Supplication on Fridays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, the first before the bringing forth and the giving of life, and the last after the annihilation of all things. The all-knowing who forgets not him who remembers him, and decreases not him